I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. One of the mysteries of the country's healthcare system is the true cost of a medical procedure, which can vary widely from state to state and even from hospital to hospital. There's a theory that if patients knew the cost, they would shop around and that would make the system more competitive and less expensive. With higher copays and deductibles, is the country ready for more healthcare price transparency? What role can providers play? And what's the relationship between cost and quality? Lots of questions. We have two guests who have joined us. Melinda Beck covers healthcare, writes the Wall Street Journal's Health Journal column. In fact, had a cover story in the Monday edition of the paper. And she joins us from the studios of the Wall Street Journal. And Melinda Beck, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thank you.
You're welcome. Also with us is Ann Weiss, Senior Program Officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And she joins us by telephone. And Ann Weiss, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks.
Melinda, let me begin with you. I'm looking actually at the front page of the story that you wrote. You look at a number of hospitals in the greater Los Angeles area, comparing the costs for certain conditions. Looking at Sherman Oaks Hospital for a chest pain, the cost $13,133. At Garfield Medical Center for chest pain, $52,580. What explains a disparity like that?
Marty, there are lots and lots of factors that go into those hospital charge master prices, they're called, or list prices. And the other thing to know is that hardly anybody actually ever pays those prices, although they do sometimes get billed to patients without insurance. That is just kind of a fantastical starting point for which insurers come along and negotiate great big discounts, even though these figures were reported to Medicare by law. This is not nearly what Medicare pays back. What those charge master prices come from giant computers in the bowels of these big hospitals that are legally bound to come up with a price for these things, but they can reflect all kinds of differences, including how sick the patient population is, how much debt the hospital is carrying. This is where you get those $77 gauze pads.
Right.
And it's just one of many layers of complexity and craziness in medical prices right now.
Let me turn to you, Ann Weiss. I mean, why is it so difficult to figure out what something costs in our healthcare system?
Well, I think one of the most interesting things about those price lists is that nobody thinks that they reflect what it actually costs to deliver the care. Healthcare is one of the few industries where the people delivering the care have more of an eye on what they're going to get paid for it, and it's understandable, than they are on really analyzing in great detail what it's going to cost them to deliver the care. And we see some Melinda wrote about this in her piece, some of the most cutting-edge systems like the Mayo Clinic or Geisinger here in Pennsylvania are now really trying to dig into what the costs actually are. But those prices, again, are largely driven by the history of, you know, what insurance companies have paid them or other mysterious factors.
Melinda, going back to you and even going back to your article, which indicates that at least someone in this country is ready for some more price transparency, is this a good, I guess, starting conversation to try to figure out what our healthcare system costs?
I certainly think so, and I think it's long overdue. And there actually is kind of a groundswell now, a movement to bring about and really insist on more price transparency in healthcare, and it's partly driven by the fact that so many insurance plans now, even though they're still paying the bulk of the bills, have ever higher deductibles, lots of copays and co-insurance in there, and we're certainly seeing that on the new health plans that have come on the exchanges under the Affordable Care Act. So patients are starting to realize that it's not just all paid by the insurance company, that they're paying a big slug of these prices, and they're starting to say, hey, wait a minute, why is this so much more expensive over here, this MRI, than I heard about it down the street? And I think that that's going to drive this demand for a little more clarity and more information.
I'm curious, though, Ann Weiss, about how someone comparison shops in our healthcare system. And I'm thinking of myself. I'm, you know, a pretty informed person. And if I needed a hip surgery, I don't know how I would go about determining cost and quality and value.
Well, you said something very important, which I want to emphasize up front. What we really want people to think about is the value of health care. And that's kind of a scary big box word. But we don't want people to only think about price. Americans have a tendency to think that more expensive is better. And the information that we're talking about now tells us conclusively that that's not true. There is good information out there about both the quality, the outcomes, the infection rates, the complication rates, and the costs of care on health plan websites, through your employer, especially if they're working with some of the cutting-edge companies. Ask them to look at companies like Healthcare Blue Book or Castlight or others. The information is available. There are 38 states that require information on costs and quality to be made available by hospitals. Medicare has information on its website about hospitals and increasingly about physician offices as well. I can tell you that if you walk into your HR department and you tell them that you care about the value of your health care benefits, they will greet you with hugs and kisses because most HR people only hear from you when you want to go to a doctor who's not in the network. So there is information out there, and I think people are going to have to start paying attention to it. And I think there's a generational thing, too, where, you know, I grew up in an age where there was one phone company and one health insurance company, and that's changing. And as we do see more competition and more people having more skin in the game, I do think we're going to see a different kind of health care shopper.
Melinda Beck, are we seeing, though, consumers using the system that already in many ways exists in terms of finding out about what things cost?
You know, it's really just starting. I think a lot of people don't know, A, how much they're going to be paying of their medical bills because a lot of these new plans and higher deductibles are just kicking in now. And then a lot of people still don't know that these resources that Ann was talking about exist. There's an organization called Catalyst for Payment Reform that's a big leader in this price transparency movement, and they've done a lot of studies, and they found that some 98% of insurance plans now do have some sort of tool where members can go online or call and ask what their out-of-pocket costs will be for various services, and some of them even let members compare what their out-of-pocket cost would be for, again, I'm using the MRI example,
right,
at many different providers in the network. But only about 2% of members who have those kinds of systems use them. And again, I think it's because people, A, don't know they're around, and B, don't know how important they are to them.
Well, I wonder too, Ann Weiss, under the Affordable Care Act, which is sort of rolling out over the last couple and next couple of years, is that also an impetus for some of this price transparency?
Absolutely, because if the majority of American families are now looking at insurance through their employers where the deductible is climbing up to or past $1,000, the most affordable products in the exchanges will have deductibles, depending on how much premium you pay for that plan, of $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, even $10,000. So there will be a huge demand for information that can help people make good decisions and get good care. I think one of the real opportunities, too, is to make, they call it making the right thing to do, the easy thing to do. So you're going to see health plans, especially in the exchanges, you're going to see a lot of insurance plans not give you a huge choice of hospitals or doctors anymore. But they will have pre-vetted those hospitals and doctors to make sure that their outcomes are good and their prices are reasonable. If you're buying one of those plans, you want to check what kind of quality standards they used, how they looked at the cost. So you may have to get used to not being able to go to any hospital that you want, but in return for that, you'll know more about the price of the services that you'll have to pay out of pocket.
And Melinda Beck, I'm reading your article. It's, you know, largely the insurance companies that set prices. They negotiate with hospitals, I guess, with doctor organizations as well. Are insurance companies willing to sort of open up this process for us to look at it?
Excuse me. Yes and no. They do have quite a lot of skin in the game, too, because this is their dollars. But historically, insurers have not wanted to really advertise, that's too strong a word, but even let anybody see what kinds of deals they're negotiating with hospitals and provider groups. This is a very competitive market. There's a lot of feeling that if another business, another hospital knew how much, you know, insurance company Y was paying to the first hospital. They'd demand the same rates. And there have even been non-disclosure clauses written into a lot of these contracts. Those are starting to come down. There are a few states that actually outlaw them. That doesn't mean that the insurers and the providers are willingly posting these lists, although a few of them are starting to. So I think we're starting to see a few chinks in this giant iceberg of opacity, but it's going to take a long time.
Well, Ann Weiss, you mentioned that a number of states are putting, I guess, pressure on providers to provide some of this opacity, as Melinda Becht has said.
Right, and health insurers, too. So the states have opportunities to... you know, I think it's kind of funny. The hospitals, the doctors, and the health insurers, it's all in their interest to keep things opaque, to keep the information aware. I mean, the doctors don't want anyone to know how low they're willing to go, and the health insurance right. plans don't want anyone to know how high they're willing to go. We're the patients. We're the people paying you whose wages and whose living expenses are being affected. So states are hearing that demand from their citizens, and they are requiring more of this information to be made available. But as Melinda said, there's a huge leap from legally requiring people to dump a lot of computer data out on the street and then making it available and accessible and usable by consumers. And that's a place where we have really tried to focus our efforts.
And is looking for a doctor to do a procedure the same as looking for a flat screen TV in terms of shopping around?
Well, I think that there are similarities. There's a lot of information available online. Your preferences should matter a lot. You may care more about being close to home. You may care more about getting back to work quickly. It may be more important to you to have a particular surgeon that your brother-in-law recommended, so your preferences matter a lot. You know, one thing you have when you decide to have surgery that you don't have when you buy a TV is you have a partner, and that partner is your family doctor. So you can talk to your doctor about these things. Physicians increasingly understand that patients have skin in the game and that cost matters. There are actually apps available that help doctors in the exam room talk to you about what your different treatment choices might cost. So one thing you can do when you go shopping for the surgeon is talk to your family doctor and ask her or him to help you make the decision.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about price transparency in our healthcare system, and that's Ann Weiss, Senior Program Officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Also with us, Melinda Becht. She covers healthcare, writes the Wall Street Journal's Health Journal column, had a big story this week in the paper, and we called her up to join us, and Ann Weiss as well. We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Are you ready to shop around? Also, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back.
Allentown Symphony Orchestra presents Mozart's Requiem, Saturday, March 8th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, March 9th at 3 p.m. Often referred to as his swan song, Mozart's final composition, Requiem, remains one of his most popular works. Introducing the newly formed Allentown Symphony Chorus. Also, cellist Christine Lampria will be featured in Barber's Cello Concerto. Information at millersymphonyhall.org. The Allentown Symphony Orchestra proudly supports WHYY.
This week on This American Life, twin 13-year-old girls who do not get along.
I got to see her when I wake up, when I go to sleep, and I don't like her.
By chance, their middle school is run by twin brothers, Ronnie and Reggie Richardson.
They're like, whoa, no, that's totally against twin code. Let's talk about this.
Seeing yourself and others, and where that leads this week.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, long shots to win, but still worthy Oscar nominees, including Her, the love story between a man and his operating system.
I had this terrible thought. Are these feelings even real? Or are they just programming?
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, and we're talking about efforts to bring more transparency to healthcare pricing with the belief that patients will comparison shop and that will help to bring down prices. Melinda Beck wrote about this for the Wall Street Journal. She joins us along with Ann Weiss from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get actually Nori from North Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Nori, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I used to work for a hospital in New York City for a few years back in between 2000 and 2002. And basically, I worked under the business operation manager. And for every surgery, we actually multiplied the cost by three times before we submitted the invoice to the insurance company. And I couldn't. You know, I used to ask on what... You know, it seemed kind of fishy to me, so I used to ask, like, was this legal? And I would never get, like, a clear answer. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't imagine it's, you know, just practiced by that single hospital because it's ran by a huge system. And I don't want to name the hospital for,
it's okay.
You know, integral reasons. But, yeah, I couldn't imagine. That's why you have a $17 Band-Aid. It isn't, Miss White, I believe that was, said it's huge computers in the basement. Making these calculations, there's no huge computers. There's someone at the helm in the operating room that's multiplying the cost of care times three.
Well, you know what, Nori, let me take your point because it's an interesting one. It's a good one, and actually I'm going to toss that first to you, Melinda Beck.
First of all, Nori, can I have your contact information? You sound like a great source.
Sure.
And well, I think that this is sort of the giant game that has developed between providers and insurers. The providers know that the insurers are going to knock down whatever the price that they set, so they set the price even higher. And that's really how this spiral has kind of gotten out of control. And interestingly, the insurers then just pass these prices on to employers that also just pass them on to consumers. And so that's kind of how this whole U.S. healthcare spending juggernaut has developed.
Well, and Nori, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And I guess the question, Ann Weiss, is if we open this up and we all see what Nori saw, will that affect pricing?
Well, I think it's a great point because transparency about price and quality is really part of a bigger culture change. Another thing we're starting to see is different kinds of payment arrangements that encourage more efficiency and better care. So an example is instead of paying for a hip or a knee replacement, gauze pad by gauze pad, you know, separate charges for every little procedure and item, negotiate a bundled payment for everything from the moment I walk in the door to the last follow-up visit from the surgeon, and all the doctors and hospitals and others who work with that patient figure out the best way to use those resources to deliver the best care. That gives them an incentive to hold down costs and to deliver the best outcomes for the patient. And we are seeing more Medicare and private insurers are increasingly turning to these payment changes. So I think transparency in a system that rewards a lot of volume instead of a lot of value won't really work. We also need to start rewarding better value care.
Melinda, we have a tweet from Bill. Doctors in the United States make much more than in other countries. That has a major impact on healthcare costs. Has that been your finding as well?
Well, it depends greatly on the kind of doctors. There are a lot of specialists that can make very, very good livings, and some who have major stakes in some of the business sides of the healthcare industry, too. There are also a lot of kind of primary care physicians that are really making just the equivalent of a middle-class income now and complaining that they get reimbursed, you know, just peanuts for their time and training and still have to pay a lot of overhead for staff who can figure out all these insurance claims. So it's very hard to generalize.
Do you want to add to that, Ann Weiss?
I think one of the other interesting comparisons to other countries that people often find surprising is we actually use fewer healthcare services than a lot of other countries. Fewer hospital days, fewer visits to the doctor. I think that surprises a lot of people.
It surprises me.
Yeah, and it underscores the point that a lot of this is about the prices. It's the prices, stupid, one famous person likes to say, because it's really not the quantity of the services we're getting.
Let me get, looks like Ariel from Ardmore to join our conversation. Ariel, go ahead. You're in Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, Marty. Hi. I just wanted to say that I had to take my daughter to urgent care facility because it was the weekend. And when I asked them right away how much it will cost, they said that they are unable to tell me because they said it depends on your insurance, it depends on all kinds of other variables. And the physician said that she is completely removed and separate from the billing department, and she has no clue about how much things cost.
Well, that's very interesting. And since, Ann Weiss, you have to leave us in a couple of minutes, I want to give you a chance to respond to Ariel's comments. And what does that tell us about the system?
It tells us that we need more Ariels to be asking questions and demanding the information and talking to their health plans and their employers. Some of the urgent care and retail clinics are very good about posting all of their prices up front, but obviously there's room for improvement. And again, I want to underscore the long-term importance of paying attention not only to the price, but also that you're getting the best care, the highest quality care. We have a ways to go, but consumers mm-hmm. demanding the information is the place to start.
But what you have said, and some of it is in Melinda Beck's piece, is that this is really a culture change within the country and within the system to think about pricing.
Absolutely. And, I think people a generation ago might have been a little nervous. If you ask what healthcare costs, it sounds like maybe you're devaluing it somehow. But as a country, we can't afford to really keep spending and wasting resources on healthcare the way we have been. And paying more attention to the ways to get high-value care, great outcomes at an affordable price, is what we really need as a nation.
And Melinda Beck, you're going to stay with us, but do you see progress on this issue?
Well, first, I just want to weigh in on what the caller's
sure.
point, because covering healthcare for the Wall Street Journal for many years here, I find this too. So many times I've asked physicians what something is going to cost, and they never know. Even there are all those complexities with individual insurance plans and deductibles, but it's very hard for doctors to even say what this MRI, I keep going to that example, or any kind of procedure or seeing a specialist is going to cost. And that's another one of those areas that has allowed this system to become kind of a perfect storm here, that the doctors don't know, so they can't tell the patients, and then the patients are really kind of powerless.
Well, and I guess, and Weiss, we're talking about people having skin in the game, and if you have skin in the game, then price matters, yes?
It does. It does. Price matters and quality matters as well.
Well, on that note, I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. Ann Weiss, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And she's a senior program officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Melinda Beck staying with us for the rest of the hour. Do you need to get a little glass of water there, Melinda? Are you okay?
Let me see if I can find one.
Okay.
Yeah, how much time do I have?
Well, you know what? We have a guest who's going to join us in a second or two. So if you want to go find a glass of water, that'd be great. But let me just quickly reintroduce you. Melinda Beck covers healthcare, writes the Wall Street Journal's Health Journal column, had a big story in the Monday edition of the paper about healthcare pricing. And joining us now is Peter Ubel, and he's a physician and behavioral economist at Duke University, where he's a professor of marketing and public policy, author of a book called Critical Decisions, How You and Your Doctor Can Make the Right Medical Choices Together. Peter Ubel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Nice to have you here. And we just had a caller, and we were just talking about the fact that in many ways, doctors within our healthcare system do not know what things cost, even things that they are recommending for their patients. Has that been your experience?
They don't know the cost to the patient. They don't know the cost to the hospital. They don't know. Yes, absolutely. We're not trained about the costs. And in fact, because there is no one cost for anything, it would probably be most physicians would find it to not be a good use of their time to try to figure it all out.
And is it just because we have such a complicated system with different, insurance companies that pay different rates? You've got Medicare, Medicaid, all of that?
Absolutely. And it could be that one insurance company that my hospital charges a different amount for a hip replacement to Aetna than to Blue Cross, than to Medicare, than to Medicaid. So the hospital doesn't have one price per procedure. It depends on which insurance company.
So what do you think about this health care pricing transparency? Would that work?
It'll work somewhat. I mean, I think we need to have more transparent prices. And I think the way it's going to happen is probably through a bunch of companies. I've probably talked to a half dozen startup companies this year where they're developing price transparency tools or apps or something that would give patients information on what it will cost them to receive something. And ideally, this kind of thing, you'd pull it up maybe in the office, and you'd not only know how much the MRI costs, but it would pay attention to whether you've met your annual deductible or not, and would tell you what the prices are of MRIs of places nearby. So I do think there's going to be technology that's going to get that information out there. And then there's still one other big, big problem, is that those costs have to be part of a conversation with a clinician about what the right thing is for you to get.
But do you think doctors should be proactive about this conversation or this information, or does it come from the consumer, come from the patient?
It needs to come from both. Everyone should be getting involved in this. And doctors right now, many times our treatments, the biggest side effect can be financial toxicity. We can harm patients more with the cost of the care than with any other treatment side effect. And so if we're not talking about the cost of care with patients, then we potentially harm them unduly.
Because if a patient doesn't know what something costs and they have a high deductible or something like that, they're going to end up paying more for a procedure than they might expect?
I was talking to a gentleman a little while ago, a 39-year-old man with metastatic colon cancer, terrible diagnosis to have at any age, and it's just tragic at 39. He was receiving a chemotherapy pill that was costing him $60 a day. Do the math. That adds up pretty quickly.
Sure.
That's almost $2,000 a month.
Sure.
He was spending through his life savings. He finally told his doctor, I don't think I can afford this chemotherapy anymore. And the doctor said, oh, my gosh, there's a cheaper chemotherapy that's just as good. So nobody talked to him about the cost of that treatment and about cost of alternative treatments before prescribing it to him, and he ended up suffering unnecessarily.
Indeed. I mean, that's a very sad story. But do doctors want to have this conversation? Doctors often will say, you know, we're so busy just trying to keep up with all the paperwork that we have to do. Do they want to have this conversation?
Well, they don't want. Many do not want to, but many do recognize that this is an important part of making the right decision. But it's hard for them to have the conversation if they can't find the cost information easily. So I think until we have those apps out there that I talked about,
right.
I think at a minimum it means, you know what, let's finish this conversation in 10 minutes, but go down the hall and talk to the financial business guy, you know, and find out what this will cost you. Or I've seen encounters where the physician said, look, I'm going to prescribe two things for you. Go to the pharmacy. Find out how much the first is going to cost you, and if it's going to cost too much, the second one's just about as good. You can do that.
Marty, I'm going to weigh in here,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, please, go ahead. Go ahead, Melinda.
This is a culture change for doctors as well as for patients,
sure.
Because I think for a long time, doctors have prided themselves on just paying attention to the medicine, the pros and cons, the evidence, and not being all that influenced by what things cost. And I spent a really eye-opening week at a neonatal intensive care unit in St. Louis a few years ago, and there the doctors really did pride themselves on not knowing what kind of insurance, if any, the patients had. Fortunately, they all had Medicaid basically as a safety net, but here they were ordering really, really expensive life and death, high stakes treatment for these tiny infants, many of which came from very poor families. And I thought, how great that they don't have to be influenced by price in these really hard decisions. But you multiply that across the entire country and everything that can go wrong with people, and that's yet another ingredient for this out-of-control healthcare cost spiral. So maybe Dr. Ubel can tell us, I don't know yet to what extent this price consciousness aspect is being taught now in medical schools, but it sounds like that's another place that there really needs to be a lot of change to fix this end of the problem.
The kind of thinking that goes into this. Do you want to respond to that, Peter Ubel?
I agree. It's about a culture change. I think we're at the beginning of it. And I do think that, in fact, the previous caller talking, it was a good example of if you're asking this question more, it will change the culture. It's part of the culture. It's pushing the culture forward. It's not part of medical training at any medical school I know of to talk about the cost of care with patients.
But I wonder whether there is a belief, perhaps among patients or consumers, that in healthcare you get what you pay for, and if something costs more, then you feel like you know it's going to be better care. How much do you think that's a belief system, Peter Ubel?
Oh, it's definitely a belief system, and that's why if people have really generous insurance, they're going to almost always want the more expensive treatment because they'll assume that means it's better. With more skin in the game, people will at least be forced to look at, well, okay, how much is it going to cost and how much better is it? And that's when clinicians have a chance to explain to someone whether it really is better or not, because generics are often just as good as trade drugs, for example.
You want to respond to that about, Melinda Beck, about cost and quality?
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of reverse psychology here on the patient's point, too. And if, excuse me, your insurance plan won't let you see that prestigious academic medical center, you get mad at the insurance plan.
Oh, yeah.
And you
want to see him even more, right?
Of course.
Exactly. And then also, when you've satisfied your out-of-pocket maximum, which in these new insurance plans is about $6,000 per person, then it's like, hey, all of it's free, of course. I'm gonna get the most benefit I possibly can out of all of my premiums, and I'm going to go to the most expensive providers there are. So that's another catch-22 in this whole system.
Well, and it's such a complicated system, as we all know, Peter Ubel, and as a sort of a lowly consumer to try to understand the system, to make it work, to try to figure out what's the best care for my family, my child, my partner. There's a lot riding on whatever decision you make.
There is, and I think that what people can try to do is just find out what the right question is you can ask to get help on it. So letting your doctor know, doc, just so you know, I am financially strapped, and so tell me if there are alternatives I should know about given that. Because otherwise a physician might just assume that money's not an issue for you or not realize that your insurance isn't as generous as the person they saw 30 minutes earlier. And so, just letting people know that the cost is an issue and that you want to know about alternatives if they exist is another way to kind of change what happens.
Well, let's take a break and we'll get back to our conversation. We have some callers that want to join us as well. We are talking about transparency in pricing in our healthcare system. That's Peter Ubel. He's a physician and behavioral economist at Duke University, where he's a professor of marketing and public policy. Also with us, Melinda Beck. She covers healthcare, writes the Wall Street Journal's Health Journal column, and had a big story in the Monday edition of the paper. Any questions or comments? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY and presents the Summer Academy, July 7th through August 1st, a program designed for talented and motivated high school students. PAFA's Summer Academy is a four-week college-level art-making experience in the nation's first school of fine art. Registration is open now, and space is limited. Details about PAFA's Summer Academy are available online at pafa.edu/summeracademy. pafa.edu/summeracademy.
On the next Fresh Air, New York Times Cairo Bureau Chief and Mideast Correspondent David Kirkpatrick tells us about his investigation into the 2012 attack on the American mission in Benghazi and about events in Egypt, where he says the government crackdown on protests and political opposition is unlike anything in modern Egyptian history. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Who fights the fight against those who want to end tax support for public broadcasting?
It does not save a penny. This legislation does not serve any fiscal purpose.
Representative Henry Waxman, friend of public broadcasting, nemesis of the tobacco lobby, leaving Congress. What's next for Waxman? That's next time on The Takeaway.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about whether the country is ready for health care price transparency. Again, our guests are Peter Ubel and Melinda Beck. And we have an email from Gary. He says, in my opinion, health care shopping will only reduce costs in the margins. It will not change current pricing model. Peter Ubel, do you agree with that?
No, you have to have the right incentives and the right amount of time and the right amount of information. The state of California ran a program for its public employees union where they said if you need a hip or knee replacement, we'll give you up to $30,000 for that procedure, but anything more than that is on yours to pay. And people shopped around. And not only that, and they chose the hospitals that had lower prices. Not only that, but a lot of hospitals that had higher prices lowered their prices to compete for the patients.
Oh, interesting. Melinda, you looked a lot at California in your piece.
Yes, and that's that example that that Peter mentioned is one of the successes out there that gets pointed to frequently, and they say that as an example of how this really can work and still give patients a lot of choice and give hospitals a lot of choice too, and whether they want to meet the prevailing price or hold out for more. I think as we start to see more efforts like that, this could potentially snowball.
Let me get, looks like Phil from Princeton to join our conversation. And Phil, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm curious to know what your guests feel about, is it a reasonable expectation that most consumers are really even capable or have the tools to make an effective choice amongst four or five healthcare plans that are really put before them? I mean, it's a multivariate equation. I can't build a choice model, and I don't have a legal team to review the contractual language in behind it. So I find transparency an interesting topic, and certainly I'm all for it, but I'm wondering how far that really gets us.
No, fair enough. Phil, thanks for the call to Radio Times. It's kind of a theme developing in this hour. Melinda, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. It sounds like you're talking about choosing among insurance plans, which is what a lot of people are now doing on the health exchanges or have in recent months under the Affordable Care Act. And you're absolutely right. It is mind-bogglingly complex. And I think we all got a little distracted by the technological problems on the exchanges and didn't quite realize how complicated it is to shop for those plans. I think there, too, more experience will help people realize, like, the fine print they should really be looking for, particularly if you're on a very expensive drug and you need to find what insurers cover it, on what tier, what the copays are. That can take a lot of digging. And in some cases, there are professional navigators out there that can help. I think if you do happen to have a particular chronic illness, you should go to whatever organization advocates for that illness, and they may have some insights into what you should look for. As for shopping for actual doctors and hospitals, there are a lot of tools out there that mm-hmm. have done some of this spade work, since my story ran, I've heard from probably three dozen other companies that are starting to join this space. And post quality ratings and comparative prices, I really do like Healthcare Blue Book, which is trying to do for healthcare what the Kelly Blue Book does for used cars.
Sure.
And give you a sense of what something should cost, and then you can go and see the range of different providers. Keep looking in this space because there's a lot of help coming to address that very complexity problem.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, Peter, is it too soon to know whether this transparency will bring down the cost? Do we know that yet?
We don't know it. With transparency alone, with no skin in the game, would only potentially cause people to seek more expensive care. Mm. But you need to have skin in the right part of the game, because you don't want people having skin in the game for life-saving therapies that they need no matter what. And so we need smarter incentives And better information. Both things really need to happen.
And do you think the fact that if more people who are uninsured are now getting insured, will that bring some more consistency to pricing in our system, Peter Ubel?
Oh, it's a great question. It certainly takes off some of the really extreme weird pricing you hear that Steve Brill wrote about in Time Magazine, for example, mm-hmm. where the hospital has a price it charges to uninsured patients that's just gargantuanly higher than it would have charged to anyone else. So that kind of variation in pricing should go down if more people get insurance.
Let me see what looks like Richard from Westchester, Pennsylvania has to say. Richard, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, just to make a quick point and look at this from a slightly different angle, how can we apply a standard business model to this highly complex system that everybody's describing, where the relationship between the doctor and the patient bears no resemblance whatsoever mm-hmm. to the relationship that we have when we walk into a store and buy mm-hmm. goods or services? And where around the world have they completely rejected that model and gone to something completely different?
Well, Richard, you raise a couple of good questions. And Melinda, let me give you the first crack at it, and then I'll go to you, Peter.
Well, I think you're right. It's never going to work like widgets or even airline prices or used cars. There, in most of those areas, you don't have this whole layer of third-party payers, which are not only insulating both sides from the real costs and the market pressures, but also taking quite a lot of profit out. Around the country, particularly the industrialized world, there are many countries that have eliminated that layer and gone to a single payer system. Many pros and cons with that, too. I don't think that we will ever see one here in the U.S., at least not in the near future, even though I'm amazed at how many people who work in the healthcare industry have come to the conclusion that we need one. So this is always going to be an odd duck here, but I think we can make it more transparent, a little bit more like airline prices and auto parts.
Linda's absolutely on target with that. I agree. We also have to remember, though, the decision maker is so different in medical care than in other. I mean, I decide to go buy a Honda or a Toyota or Chevy. I'm the one deciding that, and I don't ask the Chevy salesperson, do you think this is the best car for me, and then think they're some unbiased person. When you go to an orthopedic surgeon with knee pain, and that person, you say, well, is surgery the right thing for me? Who's making that decision? Often people come into doctors that the knowledge, you can get pretty darn informed about cars, and you can't get as easily informed about medical decisions. And so the doctor has a huge influence on the decision. So you have to not only have price transparency, you need to have doctors with the right incentives so that they're not having an incentive to do too much for patients just because it helps pay for college tuition bills.
Peter, though, do you agree with Melinda that not that it's going to happen in our lifetime, but that a more single payer or Medicare for all that would maybe bring more transparency and also bring down some of the costs of our healthcare system?
There are so many different models of healthcare systems in the world, and the one thing that most have in common is they're trying to figure out how to control healthcare costs. Now, we are still number one in the world here, no doubt about it, and price is the biggest contributor to that. But this is a problem that faces any kind of system, and a single-payer system is not a solution to it. It's one part of a very complicated puzzle.
Indeed. I mean, we've done whole hours and hours on that very issue. Let me get to, it looks like Bob from the Northeast to join us. Hi, Bob. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi. Good
hi
morning.
There. Good morning.
Yeah, I was talking, basically very interested in cost control. We had a rather frightening experience. I was the pulmonologist running the care for all the respiratory patients at Berksheim, an 800-bed facility in Reading, Pennsylvania. And over 6 months, the first 6 months that we started the practice, we dropped the census by 10%, sending the patients home that had been supposedly permanent mm-hmm. residents. The administration, of course, wondered what we were doing, and they called Medicare to come in and audit us. Medicare finished the audit and gave us outstanding ratings, said, can't believe this. This is wonderful, great care, and you're sending people home that were never supposed to go home. And we are just thrilled. We want to expand this. Don't worry about losing those patients. We're going to help you go to other hospitals, other facilities. Then along came Acumed, and they said, gee, I'd like to meet you. I've never seen a doctor who escaped an audit when we were sure they were doing a fraud, and they actually were doing good care. So they said, by the way, what are you going to do? Because we're not going to pay you. We've got a bill here for $500,000. And I said, gee, 20 techs, 12 nurses, 4 doctors, round-the-clock care for 800 people for half a year. I think it's a bargain. Well, he said, I don't, because all those patients you're sending home are going to get sick again. And they're going to cost us more money. And if they just stay in that facility, we know what the track record for that facility is. They're going to die. So we want them to stay in that facility and die, and we want you out of business.
Well, you know, Bob, and basically, it's
really, that's the reality.
No, I hear it's a complicated story. I don't have all the pieces that have fit together, but I guess, mm-hmm. Melinda, perhaps I'll put this to you. Peter Ubel is a physician. Bob said he was a pulmonologist. Does that story make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly a lot going on there, but I think what I would take away from it is we need smart incentives for what makes physicians, they keep someone in the hospital longer or short amount of time, and they can't just be about cost, it has to be about quality of care, which means finding good ways to measure quality of care, but it can't just be about price. And that's the same thing that goes for consumers choosing doctors. We don't just want price transparency, and I know other people have made this point. You need quality transparency, too.
Melinda, I mean, there are some systems, Ann Weiss talked about Geisinger. I mean, there are some systems that seem to be a little closer to addressing some of these issues we've been talking about.
Everybody is trying different new ideas out there, and what Geisinger is doing, and I wish I'd had space to get into that in this story, but there'll be many more, is really convening their doctors and coming to a consensus about what's how patients should be treated for what medical interventions for certain diagnoses. There's still a lot of variation about what doctors do and think should be done. And then they're coming up with a bundled price and saying to patients, okay, here's the total price, not all this a la carte stuff. And if it ends up costing us more to treat you, it's on us. If it cost less, then we'll save, and that's a whole new model. Actually,
I think the question is whether that sort of one size fits all model fits all patients. Peter,
no, it doesn't. Yeah, I mean, it's we're looking for solutions, and people point to things like Geisinger, Mayo Clinic. I trained at the Mayo Clinic; it's a great place. It's not, you can't just take what they do there and have it happen somewhere else, because there's all kinds of, you know, things that go into the culture of those institutions, the history, the type of people that are there. We're open to lots of different solutions, and I know the Medicare is experimenting with a bunch of them too, and I think that's one of the parts of the Affordable Care Act people haven't paid attention to. They're experimenting with different ways to both lower cost and improve quality of care, and if they find ways that work and that they work more than just in one place in the country, they will probably expand that.
Bob, thanks for the call. Let's see what Dan from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. Dan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
You're welcome.
Dr. Ubel had mentioned about going to see a physician and having the incentives of the physician aligned with those of the patient, and mentioned that profit to the physician practice may in some instances not be necessarily the same as the way that you would shop for a car. You ought to be able to shop for the service you're providing as well. And I wanted to bring up the topic of defensive medicine and the medical legal costs and the fact that physicians oftentimes are in a position where they're incentivized to order tests or do procedures or pursue care for a patient based on protecting themselves from medical legal liability. And certainly we see that where I'm here and I'm practicing physician in Philadelphia, which is very litigious. And so I wanted to ask your caller, your panelists here, what they think about the cost of defensive medicine.
Sure.
We really have a discussion about cost transparency without addressing some of those incentives that physicians are held to.
Now, Dan, it's a good question. Peter, you've all heard a knowing response from you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, quickly, we need malpractice reform, but I think doctors need to recognize you can get sued from doing too much, too. That you order an unnecessary test, which leads you to do an unnecessary biopsy, which leads to a complication, and you're going to get sued too. So it's not just doing more that avoids lawsuits. In fact, the strongest predictor of people being sued as physicians is their communication style. Are they empathetic? Are they, warm? That's the best protection against a lawsuit.
Melinda, you want to weigh on this issue as well?
Yes, it was. I was just thinking that not only is there this defensive medicine for fear of lawsuits, but you've got this whole dimension of love, too, that is jacking prices up, because nobody wants to have stinted on a relative's medical care, particularly if they're very sick. Nobody wants to say, well, yes, we might have tried this drug or this procedure, but it was really expensive. You don't even do that with the veterinarian at your dog. So there are so many different drivers pushing costs ever crazier and ever up. And it's going to be very complicated to take all these pieces down, and we'll never change some of them.
Well, and we're almost out of time here, but what you're talking about, Melinda, is the what gets spent at the end of the last year of someone's life.
Yes, which is takes the numbers change a lot, but it's about something like half of all medical expenditures go to people in the last years of life, which that's when they get sick, but it also indicates that they're not all that effective.
Mm. Well, much more to discuss, but the clock tells me we are out of time. Melinda Beck, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
And she writes the Wall Street Journal's Health Journal column. Peter Ubel, thank you very much as well.
My pleasure.
And he's a physician, a behavioral economist at Duke University, wrote a book called Critical Decisions, How You and Your Doctor Can Make the Right Medical Choices Together. We also spoke with Ann Weiss, Senior Program Officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. In fact, carry on a conversation on our homepage. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.